Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 300, recorded on June 24th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This show is sponsored by Atlassian at Atlassian.com. We'll talk more about them later on in the show. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer and Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing good.
Hanging in there.
Sweet. We've been living with the news from WWDC for 2 weeks now, and not a lot. I mean, I guess there are a lot of little tidbits here and there that have cropped out. Maybe you guys have some stuff that you want to mention that you learned about in the betas. I installed the beta on my iPad, and I guess the thing that I didn't realize I would enjoy it this much, but messages. The fact that you can put GIFs in there, so Apple put in, you can...
GIFs, you mean?
Whatever. there are extensions that you can add to messages, right? So Apple put in the stickers app extension, whatever you call it. You've got Apple Music in there, so you can share Apple Music in line, which is nice. And then there is, I don't know what the service is. It's something that lets you search for GIFs or GIFs. And it's one of those things that there are times when I want to insert one, but it would have taken too much time, but now you can just click on the little thing and look up your Picard facepalm or what have you and throw it in there. I haven't used the stickers yet. And they're also there's the thumbs up sort of deal, but overall I'm very impressed with messages now. I think the thing that I was kind of, I didn't like it when I first saw the demo of it, but I think it was the demo. I think the demo went to trash very quickly.
They did have some issues with the demo.
But for what it's worth, they were probably encountering a lot of the bugs that I have encountered with it as well. It's obviously very new still. They're still working out bugs. So I wouldn't really highly recommend installing the beta on a primary device. In fact, don't do that at all. Don't do that. It's very buggy right now.
Yeah.
It's on my iPad and...
It's funny. Other people have been saying it hasn't been that buggy.
Well, at least the messages part was real buggy. And you know what's weird is every beta I install on my iPad has the issue of rotation. It gets all confused about how to rotate itself when I...
Oh, that always happens with the betas.
I don't understand how that's such a big problem in the betas. It must be like a prank that they're playing.
I've had that problem. I've had that problem with like almost every beta that I've ever done, I've ever installed.
You wouldn't think it would be such an issue.
I know,
it seems pretty simple and you don't need to necessarily change it.
So I don't know if it's something maybe related to the debugging stuff and it just whacks it out or what.
It may be, yeah. Yeah, so the it's weird, the notification stuff, right? So now the home or the lock screen, you have to press the home button to unlock it. And you've got the widget screen and you've got the new notification style. And I think it was pretty well coded for devices with 3D touch, and it's not so well done. Actually, it's not done really that well for devices that don't have 3D touch. So it's kind of buggy still. So I haven't been able to fully test stuff out in that regard. I do like where they're going with music so far. There are some complaints I have, but you can do split screen music with in your iPad, right? So you can do Safari on one side and pull over your music app, and actually that lets you have the same interface as you would on a phone. And I also like that you can do split view Safari windows on your iPad now. Do you guys see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so you don't need Sidefari anymore.
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit last time.
Yeah, yeah, but it's just one of those things that it's so nice. You also get the three-column view. You can do three-column on your iPad Pro in Mail. So you can have a compose and your old messages and all that stuff too. So I don't know if that's the 9.7 iPad or if it's the bigger iPad. But so some news that we saw, TextEdit was spotted in an iOS 10 demo during WWDC. Did you guys see this?
I saw the screenshot.
Yeah. So there's a possibility that we may be seeing TextEdit come to iOS, which I would very much like.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. I mean, I already have.
I kind of feel like how Jeff feels.
Really good text editing apps that I'm using Ulysses.
Okay.
So I just don't need anything else.
Yeah, right. I use Byword.
Ooh, Byword's good too.
Mostly because, I mean, Ulysses is much more, I think, a more robust writing tool. You know, Byword is just my go-to for, because I do a lot of Markdown. So
that makes sense.
It's nice and simple, and it's on every platform. I think Ulysses is too, right? You can do Mac, iPad, and iPhone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are apps. Oh, this is on the Mac and on iOS, isn't it? Both of those apps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I just like TextEdit. It's one of my favorite apps. I always have it open. It's great for taking down notes.
Well, how is that different than Notes?
Notes is garbage. I don't know. It may not be. Notes didn't have...
They've added all kinds of new stuff to Notes now. I mean, it's pretty robust. You can do bulleted lists. You can do rich text formatting. You can embed images, and you can do... It does the inline, you know, thing with URLs and... with the URL previews and...
Yeah, I guess you're right. I haven't had enough time to play with...
Like, the new Notes is pretty robust.
But the thing is...
You can put in audio and video files.
But I'm not using TextEdit for those same sorts of things, right? I'm not using it for actual notes. I'm using it for little, like... They're more like stickies or scrap paper... in a lot of cases.
Yeah, that's what Notes is for.
All right, yep. Whatever. I like my thing, and I'm going to stick with it. So I'm happy that...
I'm really happy for you, well, Michael.
I really recommend Byword. I mean, Byword's great for that sort of thing.
Okay.
And it syncs with... You can use iCloud syncing or Dropbox syncing. You can write Markdown in it or just write straight text.
Yeah.
Put things in folders, organize things however you want. Have them everywhere. It works the same on every platform.
Yeah, Ulysses is like that in many ways. It's, man, I can't imagine not using Ulysses for all of my stuff. And
no,
I think do a lot of writing away from my Mac, and it's all in Ulysses.
Yeah, I think Ulysses is a better tool for maybe longer form writing than Byword might be, but maybe it doesn't matter. Just looking for a good text editor.
I think you're right. And when I'm writing... on my iPad, it tends to be longer form. That's probably
I've looked at Ulysses because I know a lot of people who really, really like it. But most of the people that I know who like it are people like you, Jeff, who are like blogging or writing in some way for a living. And so my main hesitation would be, I'm not sure what benefits for the kinds of things that I'm doing, which is mostly... like short note-taking lists, you know, more like outlining kinds of writing to justify the extra cost.
Like, it looks really pretty.
Yeah. And just looking at the set of features. So I've just had a hard time because Ulysses, I think, is a little more expensive, which I think is great. Because, again, they're not falling prey to... the pricing problem that I think most apps suffer from. So, because I think on the Mac it's like $45, and I want to say it's $20 on iOS or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe. I don't remember.
So, I think for you, Adam, Ulysses
is $25. $25.
Not the right tool.
It's a $75 investment.
But if you're writing
Yeah, but like, again, it's a pro tool. Yeah. Yeah. It's a tool for writing prose, I think, as opposed to like Byword. I want to say it was about $10 on each side, so maybe 20. I don't remember. It's been so long since I bought it. But it is, I mean, it's a very simple text editor. It doesn't have a lot of extra bells and whistles to it. You know, it's a write sync. I think you can pay to get some extra publishing exporting features. Yeah, so I want to say it's $11.99 for iOS or for the Mac, and I want to say about the same price, maybe a little less for iOS for Byword.
Dang. Okay.
$5.99.
Let's see here. iPhone 7 may have dual SIM trays. This coming from...
Oh, that was such a bogus rumor. Are we going to talk about this one, really?
Rockfix via Engadget.
Apparently we are, Adam.
I guess we are. I mean, I started to, so...
It's in the news. I mean...
It's in the news. Yeah, but it is.
You know, Jeff, say it.
Fakeity fake, 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 fake.
Does the Apple SIM take care of that? You can't do that with the Apple SIM, right?
I think the idea, right, is you'd be traveling, and so you could pop in another second SIM.
Or if you had like a business phone account and a personal phone account, you could have right. both.
Yes, yes. I think that's probably more so. But I think the
Apple would prefer
SIM,
you to just buy two phones.
Right.
That makes more sense. But the Apple
from
SIM,
Apple's perspective,
I believe,
yes.
The Apple SIM should let you do switching, I think.
But not on the fly between carriers, right?
I think it does.
Really?
Maybe.
I think with their SIM, you can have a single account active at any time.
Yes, that's what I...
But with the dual SIMs, you could have two accounts active simultaneously.
Correct, yeah. So it's not the same thing.
No.
Right, okay. So let's see here. iPhone 7 rumored to ship with standard... 3.5 millimeter ear pods, but include a lightning adapter.
Not surprising.
This is according to Mako Takara, and
that I would buy as the solution if Apple is getting rid of the headphone jack. That's very much like what Apple would do.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be shocked if Apple didn't include the headphone adapter.
But they're not even shipping ear pods with lightning. They just won't be shipping lightning. Headphones at all. They'll say someone else figure this out. Which is
I bet you anything they will release a lightning version of a wired Beats headphone simultaneously.
Ooh. Hadn't thought about that. I bet you're right.
It just seems like a great way to damage the port having such a long dongle.
How do we know what the dongle looks like?
A longle.
Yep. Well, we have a general idea. There's the companies out of China that have announced their lightning to headphone adapters, and they all look pretty much the same. So that gives us an idea what to expect.
Michael, I would imagine it's going to be a lightning connector and then a short lead, like, you know, a couple inches, and then the 3.5 millimeter jack.
Yep.
So I don't think it's going to be like just a solid thing sticking out the bottom of the jack. It's going
to be
more like
a floppy
cord.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be a cord.
Yeah. Just like the current, if you look at any of the current lightning adapters, they're all like that.
Okay. Yeah.
They all have like a, you know, it's maybe a 6-inch.
Yeah. 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 I gotcha.
Little cord. That way it'll be flexible and it won't put stress on the lightning port.
So you guys are buying this, that they're gonna do it this way, and I mean it seems plausible to me. On the surface it seems very un-Apple-y, but if they are indeed pushing for lightning only headphones, then it's sort of an eat your own dog food sort of measure, right, where they're kind of pushing the industry in that direction or pushing themselves. I'm not really sure.
Well, and I think the bigger thing is it's going to ease the consumer transition because people are going to be peeved no matter what.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
So the
people
headphones
are not going to be happy about the change. So at least by including that, they take some of that some of that pressure off because the consumer can go, okay, well, this, I'm not happy about this, but I can still use my headphones. I have everything in the box that I need. I'm not having to buy extra stuff. And it is very unlike Apple. But again, I think this is Tim Cook's Apple, not Steve Jobs' Apple.
Right.
And they've been doing a lot of things that I would have looked at Apple, 5 years ago and went, no way.
Well, it's also a way to allow you to still use your headphones with other devices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now what happens to...
Well, and it's the cheapest solution for Apple too. I mean, that dongle is not going to cost them very much, and they already include ear pods anyway. They've been doing that. So the only additional cost is the adapter, which
I guess
a couple bucks probably per unit.
Right. And then Apple's retail price, if you go to buy one later on, would be like $29 or $39.
I was thinking like 20.
I was originally thinking $19. Yep. And then I was thinking, well, no, they're putting a whole DAC in there.
Yeah.
So 29 cheapest.
What happens to things like Square? The Square registers.
They will have to release a new version.
They already have a new version.
Oh, there you go.
Do they? What are they?
Yeah, they have the new wireless one.
Oh, it's wireless now? It's for like Bluetooth?
For chip cards and Apple Pay.
Okay.
It's Bluetooth. Nice. I mean, it comes with the thing for the swiper. The only problem with that reader is it doesn't have a way to work with swipe cards. So, yeah, they're going to have to come out with something else.
So they can come out with one that goes into Lightning, or you just plug in.
Actually, it would probably work through the adapter, I would imagine.
That's what I'm guessing.
That sounds like fun. Sounds like fun. Although you don't have to update. You don't have to upgrade your stuff, so you're not being forced.
That's the other thing with Square. Like, how many people have like an extra old iPhone or iPad around they could just continue to use as their register?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, a lot of the retailers that I've seen that have Square actually already have a dedicated iPad that is just their Square thing.
Yeah, exactly. Wall Street Journal says that Apple's 2016 iPhone is going to have the headphone jack removed, but the major changes won't come until next year.
Yep.
So again, more confirmation. So honestly, I'm thinking I may just hold off on this year's iPhone, get the new Apple Watch, and wait for next year's iPhone.
Because I say that now six. Until you see it. And then
I also have to save money. So
yeah, you think that.
I know.
Yeah, you say that today.
I have to eat food.
You just go with
that today.
There's always ramen.
So, yeah. Oh, God.
Or panhandling.
True. Yeah, I could do that. It's a good place.
Actually,
for that.
True story. So, the Starbucks that I go to, there is a woman who comes in and she has this bag full of like electronic gear, like a cell phone and a bunch of other stuff. And she goes into the Starbucks. She plugs all of her stuff in, and then she leaves. So I watch her leave this one time. And then I'm driving out and she's sitting on the corner panhandling.
Nice.
And I'm thinking, yeah, you're panhandling, but you've got an iPhone and a cell phone contract. So what the heck?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a huge homeless problem here in Boulder. And it's interesting how many of the people that are just living out on the streets have a smartphone. And on one hand, I look at it and like, really? You have a smartphone, but you can't afford a place to live. But on the other hand, maybe they're coming up with enough money so they have a connection back to the rest of their world.
Yeah, I think it is too. I think a lot of cities too, and a lot of places you can get subsidized the help for communications. But it just sort of goes to show how important I think communication devices are in our society. You know, it's like you've got to have this, even if you don't have other basic necessities. Sometimes. Yeah. It was just an interesting thing. I'm not trying to make any super commentary other than I just thought, wow, she's plugging in all her electronics gear and then at the same time is having a rough go of it. And it was just a weird dichotomy.
Yep. Let's see. Maka Takara says that the iPhone 7, although that It won't have a lot of major changes. It will have a longer earpiece cutout and a different ambient light sensor. So they're thinking it's going to be a dual ambient light sensor, and it will be relocated.
This is for what?
The iPhone 7. Hmm. So the...
Why do we need a longer cutout?
No idea. I have no clue. But I guess the takeaway is that it will affect people who have screen protectors that they want to reuse on this phone. Mm. You'll have to get a new screen protector, which I think most people probably get new screen protectors. Those aren't really that reusable, are they?
Or get out your X-Acto blade. I think the tempered glass ones, which have become more and more popular, are probably the ones that they're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah, I would assume you could reuse those, but I don't know. Seems like it'd be hard to get off without cracking it.
I still don't use a screen protector. Never have.
I wish I would have used one on my Apple Watch.
Yeah, you got a scratch?
Oh, I got a massive scratch.
Oh, that sucks.
I only have a little itty-bitty
one. It's like deep and long. Like yeah. If I hold it at the right angle, I mean, it refracts.
So you have a chasm in your watch.
Yeah.
A Mars-like chasm down the middle of your watch. That's cool.
It's kind of off to one corner. I don't notice it too often, but when I do, it's like, ah.
Yeah. I have a little scratch in the upper right-hand corner that I got when I had to get under my car when I pulled over, because suddenly my exhaust sounded like my engine was about to explode.
Well, consequently, I will be getting the Ion X version.
Nice.
This time around, instead of the sport version.
Yeah, I haven't scratched my screen, just the case, so I'm good.
I'm talking about the screen. Yeah, scratch is on the screen.
Right. So luckily, I haven't had any issues with that yet. So we've got a lot more to talk about, but first we should mention our wonderful sponsor, Atlassian, because today it seems like nearly anything is possible, and if you can dream it, a team of great people can build it. So how do you go about bringing everyone together to create what's next? Well, you team up with Atlassian, makers of collaboration software that lets teams work and communicate better together. With their suite of collaboration software, you can assign, track, and manage tasks for any project, no matter how complex. That's the clarity of Jira. Create and share content, organize results, and bring team members up to speed. That's the flexibility of Confluence. Instant message or video chat with your team from any device. That's the freedom of HipChat. And you can test, review, and manage code in real time. That's the power of Bitbucket. And the cool thing about Atlassian is that I'm actually using it regularly at JPL, NASA JPL, because they use that. NASA in general uses Jira and Confluence and a bunch of other Atlassian software to do all the cool things that they do, which speaks to how awesome the software really is. So check them out. Visit Atlassian.com and see how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. Atlassian, helping teams everywhere team up to create what's next. That's Atlassian.com. Check them out. They're great. All right. And with that, let's talk a little more about iOS 10. Let's see here. Oh, this one's interesting. It has been found by the MIT Technology Review that iOS 10 has an unencrypted kernel. I believe that includes the kernel and the kernel cache, which includes the extensions. And so there was speculation that perhaps this was an oversight by Apple, but Jonathan Zerdisky believed that it, would be ridiculous for them to accidentally forget to encrypt their kernel. And in fact, Apple came out the next day and confirmed that they meant to do it on purpose. So the idea, according to them, is that, to quote them, the kernel cache doesn't contain any user info, and by unencrypting it, we're able to optimize the operating system's performance without compromising security. And they told that to TechCrunch.
Now, one thing I'm unclear on, is this something they're doing during testing, or is this going to, or is it just going to stay unencrypted?
It sounds to me like it's going to stay unencrypted, right? So because of the way they phrased this statement, that because it doesn't contain any user info, they're optimizing performance by leaving it unencrypted, which I believe. But there's also talk of having this unencrypted is perhaps a very good move for Apple security-wise, so that flaws, exploits may be found more easily, but that they would very likely not be able to be hoarded as they were by was it an Israeli company that unlocked that phone, Syed Farouk's iPhone? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, help me out here. Isn't encrypting all of our data better than leaving some of it unencrypted?
Well, it's not our data, right? It's their data. So there's no user data there. It's on the system partition. So it's not, it doesn't have
anything. Oh. I was having a mental disconnect. I've got it now.
Yep. Yeah, so this is the actual kernel and the file system extensions, the operating system extensions, I should say. Yeah.
Incidentally, unencrypted kernel cache, name of my Daft Punked cover band.
Nice.
Oh my God, you're the most awesome ever.
And just another aside, because I Googled Daft Punk. The Google results show official website, new sounds and downloads, uses Shockwave.
Uses Shockwave?
Oh yeah, like the Google.
Seriously?
Their metadata says their site uses Shockwave.
Oh. Yeah, I see that. That's cool. It probably does.
That's the funny thing. It probably still does use Shockwave, which I don't think has been used since like 85.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, 95 maybe. Anyway.
Well, you know, updating website's expensive. And migrating out of front page.
Whoa. Yeah,
that's crazy.
You can get a Daft Punk Fisher Space Pen.
Sure.
But Daft Punk.
Yeah.
What do you mean, sure? Like you knew this?
No, it makes sense to me. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, it does make sense. Yeah, that's cool. It's $50, though. That's an expensive.
Sure it is.
That's an expensive space pen.
But you can write upside down and underwater.
You can go to space.
I can use it in space. Yeah. Okay. So, and Spotify has twice as many paid subscribers as Apple Music, according to the Telegraph. And they have 30 million monthly paying subscribers, while Apple Music has 15 million paying subscribers, which honestly is pretty damn good for Apple Music.
Yeah, Apple Music has managed to get half the number of paid subscribers as Spotify in just over a year.
Yeah.
For Spotify, this was a 10-year progression.
And so Spotify is operating at a loss. Do we know if Apple's making money off of this?
No, because Apple's not breaking that out. However, Apple's overall music or multimedia services is making money.
Okay. So, of course, Apple does have the ability to run this at a loss because relative to the rest of their businesses, the loss would be, I'm guessing, very low, especially if Spotify can handle it. But the thing I wanted to bring up is, so while I very much like Apple Music and I use it pretty much every day, the issue I have is some tracks in certain albums just kind of, they play some other tracks. As in it
yes.
It, you know, it says it's the right album, it's the right artist and everything, and it should be playing some other song, but it's playing something else. It's like a remix or something like that. Basically something that someone else, I'm guessing, uploaded and has now screwed up my music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a bucket of awesome.
Yeah, it sucks.
Welcome to Apple Music.
And the thing is, so I'm playing that from my own library. If I go into Apple Music and search for the album, it plays perfectly. Which is real cool.
So yeah, there are some issues with their matching algorithm.
Is there any way we can fix that or anything we can do to report? Or I guess you just have to report it, right?
I think you need to get a job at Apple.
Okay, I'll do that. But you guys,
this is what a lot of people have been complaining about. And this is where a lot of people are thinking or saying that, hey, Apple Music has replaced my music with, you know, their own stuff or what have you.
Or someone else's junk.
Yeah. Now, again, if it's your local, like, downloaded music, you shouldn't be having this problem.
This is, well, I'm going to check right now, actually. It typically happens when it's matched
and it's trying to stream from, you know, where it's in iTunes in the cloud or whatever it's called.
Yes. Okay. So now what I'm looking at is...
iCloud Music Library is what they call it now.
Yeah. This looks like music that... Yeah, I do have it on my device. Okay, but it's possible that they were playing not from my device.
Correct. But I think that's where it gets screwed up, is when it's something that's matched, it's been put into your iCloud Music Library, but for some reason the matching algorithm on Apple's side has screwed it up and they've put in... Most commonly what happens is you end up with, like, you had a live version and now you've got the studio version playing instead of the live version. And if it's within an album, it can even be sometimes where, like, some of the tracks are right and then some of them are wrong, and it's just really confusing.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of that. It's such a bummer. But
it's on the match side, and that's why Apple has pointed out, and I would tell our listeners, it's really important, you know, your master library that, you know, is the one on, like I use my main library on my Mac, which has all the music that I've ripped and everything like that. Don't remove that, and don't, even after it's matched, don't remove it and then try and pull down from Apple's library, because if it's mismatched, then you will end up with the wrong version locally. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think's been getting some people upset, is somehow, some way, you know, they've gone through the matching process, they've ended up deleting the local file from their master library, thinking, well, I can just re-download it from, you know, iTunes in the cloud or my iCloud Music Library, and then they end up with the wrong version. And then they're pissed, right? Because it's the wrong version. But, you know, iTunes in the cloud is not a backup system for all the stuff that you ripped, and you shouldn't be using it that way. It's even more frustrating, because if you use iTunes Music Match, that doesn't seem to have this problem.
I think I had that issue too.
Okay. iTunes. Well, I haven't heard it as much, and I've heard people say, "Well, I have iTunes Music Match." And the other thing about the iTunes cloud library, again, with not deleting your local stuff and pulling it down, is with that one, if you delete your local file and pull down Apple's copy, even if it's the right copy, it has the DRM on it. And a lot of people forget that too. I'm not talking about stuff that was matched and uploaded. I'm talking about stuff that was matched from the Apple Music Library.
Yeah.
Because everything in the Apple Music Library, because of the nature of it being a subscription service, even when you store it locally, has DRM applied to it.
Yep. Makes sense.
So you always want to make sure one of your libraries, that's all your ripped stuff, you keep that pristine and you don't pull Apple's copies into that library. You don't want that.
Or you could just not worry about it and realize that everything is impermanent anyway and just go on with your life.
That's what I've chosen to do. Like you said, I mean, I almost always just am now playing music, even stuff that's from my library, I will just play straight streaming out of Apple Music Library.
I prefer the cached version, just because I don't have to use it. I don't have to wait. I don't have to worry about the quality. But yeah, I totally feel you. So with that, unless you guys have heard about any other cool features with iOS 10,
nope.
I think we're going to go to our picks. So first, I'll let Jeff go. What's your pick?
I'm going kind of old school today, and I'm going with Bejeweled Classic.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a game that's been around for a long time, but it has interface versions for the iPhone and the iPad, so it doesn't just do like pixel doubling and look weird.
Nice.
And it's still just an addictively fun game. So it's free, but trust me, you want to pay the $1.99 or $2.99 to get rid of the ads, because the ads are so painfully obtrusive. And once you pay to get rid of the ads, then it's just the magical, wonderful, relaxing Bejeweled that we remember from all those years ago.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So it's free, but you can pay $3 to get rid of the ads.
And totally pay to get rid of the ads.
Yeah, there are a lot of apps that I wish you could pay to get rid of the ads. So that's nice they're doing that.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Adam, what's your pick?
My pick is a super simple, you've got 30 seconds or a couple minutes where you need to kill the time in line kind of app. It's a game. It's called Saber Master Follow the Light by Space Inch. And it is a totally funny amalgamation of Star Wars and other sci-fi and nerd culture references and stuff like that. The basic concept is you have a little character. They're in the center of your iPhone screen. You tap, their lightsaber comes out. It starts spinning. And then around the outside, sort of orbiting around you, is another opponent who also has a lightsaber. And then there is a little dot that is spinning. And when the two sabers and the dot all line up, you tap the screen and then it'll start rotating a different direction and there'll be a different dot and they move at different speeds. And basically you're trying to, every time you hit the dot, you get a point and you start to try to level up. So like I'm currently at level 14, trying to get to level 15, because as you get up to basically tapping the dot or, you know, touching the two sabers together more and more times, you can earn bonuses. So like new different kinds of lightsabers. Like I did, I'm working my way up. I earned the Emerald Saber. So you start with a standard saber. And then like for characters and things like that, you start out with Princess Cinnamon Buns as your character.
I'm playing it right now.
And I'm working up to Skywalker Texas Ranger. And then there's Jar 3PO.
Nice.
Chinchilla Chewbacca. Action Figure Man. I'm really looking forward. Once I unlock Princess Cinnamon Bun at level 35, I get Dark Lucas.
Ha! Cool.
So it's all kind of fun stuff like that. But I mean, the game is totally dumb. You can buy certain, there are in-app purchases. So some characters you do have to buy, unfortunately. So like Jar 3PO is a 99-cent in-app purchase. They do have a buy everything, but it's a little pricey. It's $29, $29.99. And I say that at the same time that I say we should support our developers. So if you really, really like this game, it's just for this style of game, to be honest, I'm not sure $30 is the right price point for everything. And you can buy different kinds of lightsabers. So, you know, there is the light phaser, if you're more of a Star Trek person. You have the Swiss Army Knife version, Pizza the Sword. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. So they've done there's a lot of cool geek culture references. But I mean, the game is super simple. It's not complicated. You spin the person, you tap when the lightsabers hit, and you keep doing that, and you level up. So I am currently...
I just got the Emerald Saber.
Yeah, I'm currently a level 14 apprentice working my way up to level 15.
Whose cat is that?
Where?
Not
I'm hearing cat noises. Cat
That's
got
to be yours.
Oh, it's probably mine. All right. Cool. So Saber Master, Follow the Light. Check it out. So my pick is going to be for people, I guess, who are either in California or willing to travel there. It's the California Science Center. And I went there this past weekend with my mom. And it is free, so it's a free pick. However, parking, if you don't get there some other way, if you want to park, it's $12. 12 or 15, I can't remember. But man, that place is awesome. I went to see my family in Arizona recently, and we went to the Arizona Science Center. And It cost a lot of money, and my mother was very upset because the California Science Center was so much better, and it was free. She paid like a couple $100 for the family to go to the Arizona Science Center, and this was so much better. So they've got like aquatic stuff. They've got, you know, ocean stuff, earth stuff, biology. But they also have the Space Shuttle Endeavor, of course, that is there. And they just recently took delivery of a Space Shuttle external fuel tank. So you've got the big orange tank there sitting on its side outside. And eventually it will be mounted. They have the actually used solid rocket booster casings. And so they will assemble solid rocket boosters, put the external tank there, and mount the Space Shuttle Endeavor to it. And I think they're saying 2018, so two more years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those things that they're still raising money for it. They've been raising money since before Endeavor arrived, and they're still raising money. It's a very expensive project because they're going to have to build an enormous building. I think it's going to be, I would guess, 250 feet tall or more. To have this huge building encasing it. But you'll be able to walk up to the 195 where they actually board the space shuttle and all this stuff. And the last time since I've been in there, they put in cameras into the payload bay and in the cockpit and stuff, and so they've got it powered up a little bit, and they've got displays on so you can see live views inside. It's very cool. So check it out. It's free. And I highly recommend everything else at the Science Center as well. So if you've got someone with you who doesn't like the space stuff, there are tons of other things going on there too. You can pet sea urchins and that sort of thing. So
have you seen Finding Dory?
I have not yet.
Okay. When you see Finding Dory, petting sea urchins and starfish and stuff suddenly takes on a whole different perspective.
I'm guessing it does. And I heard that Dory's from Morro Bay.
Yes.
So I guess everybody in Morro Bay is all excited now. There are signs for Finding Dory all over the city, which is pretty funny. Oh, and I also saw the A Beautiful Planet. It's the new IMAX, the new NASA-sponsored IMAX movie, which if you have a chance to see A Beautiful Planet, it's very good. It's by the same director that's done a lot of the other space IMAX movies, and I would highly recommend seeing it in the IMAX at the California Science Center. It's epically big.
That's so cool.
Yeah, with that, of course, all of our picks in the show notes are at theiosshow.com. You can review the show on iTunes, tell a friend, rate the show, all that stuff. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the address to which you can send your questions, comments, feedback, all that stuff. And our sponsor this week is Atlassian, atlassian.com. Check them out. And our advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen, he's at the MattCast, mattcast.com, and at MattCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me. Fun as always.
And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. The TMO Daily Observations podcast every weekday. Did you already do that today?
Yes, it's already up and out there. And you should totally listen because I talk about drinking the Dvorak juice.
Nice. John C. Dvorak or the keyboard that, Dvorak?
John C. Dvorak. It's mildly disturbing.
It sounds, yeah. I'm going
to
have
totally
to listen
need
to that.
Check it out.
Yeah. and at Jay Gamet on Twitter. I am at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show. An iPod. An iPod.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.